Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature. And we have a fabulous guest who's come back a second time. Or third time? I can't remember.
Second time?
Okay, good. Well, he's here again. I guess I didn't scare him the first time. So his film, Without a Name, is available free on YouTube, isn't it?
It's on YouTube. It's also on Amazon and coming soon to several other platforms, including Fossum.
Emmett Leverdale's here. Welcome back.
Thank you. So it's actually...
I said it wrong. I know I did. Leverdale?
Loverdy, yeah.
Loverdy. Ah, close enough. Yeah. Guys, just punch it. It's L-O-V-E-R-D-E. Just run as a search on Google. You will find Without a Name. I guarantee it. That's how I found it. So go look it up. Just skip this interview. Come back. And then everything will be ruined for you. And what was your other film again? I'm sorry. I've forgotten.
I was the cinematographer and editor of a new film called What Now, Mama? And then I have a new film that I'm working on now that I haven't finished. And that one is called The Maginot Line.
Are we even discussing What's New, Mama? Should we let them in on the secret that you were supposed to be here for What's New, Mama? And the director decided not to show up, so we're doing something different.
She's been doing a lot of traveling and that kind of thing. It's okay. I'm happy to talk about it. I think it's a very good film. It's just so hard. It's hard to, because she's in another state, and it's very hard to nail everything down. So,
well, that's enough of what's up. Well, if you guys want to check that out, email the director because she does want to be on my show. So let's move on. Why this story? Where does this come from? I mean, can I call it a cult film? Because I would.
It's about a cult, and okay. I hope it achieves cult status at some point.
Well, we do. Yes, we definitely want that.
I had a writing partner, and this is a little story that kind of figures into a lot of projects that I'm doing. His name was Larry Maravilla, and I have worked with Larry since. I've known him since 1984, but I've worked with him since 1993. And Larry and I have written a bunch of scripts together. And, you know, that wasn't like a straight through, you know, we stopped collaborating for a while for, you know, various reasons. But we connected a couple of years ago, and he said, "Hey, I want to write a horror movie. Would you like to write a horror movie?" I said, "Sure." And so the intention was always to write something that I could direct. And Larry's a little older than I am. He was about 22 years older than me, and his health wasn't real great. So anyway, we wrote this very fun horror movie called Ficus Rex. And in a nutshell, it's about a tree that eats people, and it's really fun. It's a little campy, but it's also kind of scary. And I was, you know, doing the breakdowns of the script and getting ready to, you know, to figure out how to get the money to do this and everything. And then I realized that I was going to have to manage a giant tree that could pick people up and move them around. And I said, I'm not experienced with that kind of vision, you know, special effects. And I don't know that I can do that competently. So I said, could we write another one? That's easier. I mean, I felt bad because we'd had so much fun and we're like, yeah, this is going to be great. And then I suddenly realized like, I don't want to go past my, you know, boundaries of what I know. So we came up with this new one. It's called Without a Name. And Larry and I have always had great interest in religion and the effects it has on people and, you know, what people do in the name of religion, that kind of thing. So we wrote this a couple of years ago, and then I went around trying to figure out where we could shoot it and how we could shoot it. It is a I don't think I'm spoiling anything when I tell you it's not a supernatural film. It's not about.
No, definitely, you know, not. You're, yeah, not. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, some people, you know, that when you say horror, people think monsters, and it's like, no, the horror in this one is human. This is about bad things that humans can do. But anyway, we found a place to shoot it. We found a crew, and we shot it. We edited it, and I literally would bring every week, would meet with Larry, show him the new scenes, get his comments and his thoughts and everything. And he was with me every step of the way. And there was a screening of it in Los Angeles in December. And I took Larry to the screening, and and he loved it. He had a lot of fun. He said he was After the movie, he said, "I've never seen my name on the screen before as a writer."
Really?
Yeah, he had been a playwright for many years.
Oh,
That's that that
there we
was
go.
his yeah. But he always wanted to write a movie. Anyway, that was in December, this past December, and Larry passed away in February, and I was very disappointed about that. I'm happy that he got to see the movie to the end, and I'm glad that he was proud of it. We've written a bunch of other things, which I still want to try to get off the ground, but Larry, unfortunately, is no longer with us. So the movie's dedicated to him. I didn't mean, I hope I didn't bring down the
Oh, I'm not going to
vibe
change. You know what I'm like.
here. But I mean, I like I said, we're both very proud of the film, and and I'm honored that he wanted to make this with me. I mean, it was, he's like I said, he's got a lot of successes under his belt as a playwright, and the fact that he wanted to do this with me, it made me very proud. So,
Okay, we can move on from Larry. Great film.
yeah.
Let's move along. Okay. You seem to have a lot of people in this film. I'm quite shocked for an indie, the amount of people you have in the film.
Yeah.
So where
It
who are
was.
all these people? I'm not saying you had to cast them all. Do you know some of them, or some of them are kids of the people in the film?
Well, it's funny because Hayato Mitsuishi, who is the one of the producers of the film, he and I met at a film festival in West Virginia, in like 2018, 2019. And I just, he was there with a Japanese film, and I met with him and the director of that film and had a great time talking with him. And I assumed he was from Japan. And it turns out he's Canadian.
Oh,
He grew
good.
up around Toronto, yeah.
It doesn't come on my show. I don't know why then.
Well, we'll work that out, 'cause he's great. And I said, "Well, so where do you live? Where, and I was thinking Japan or something like that." He said, "I'm in Los Angeles." It turns out he lives four blocks from me. So we go all the way to, we meet in West Virginia and find out we live four blocks from each other in Los Angeles. So this is our Without a Name is actually the second film that we made together. And I hope to do more with him. He was Working with him was such a pleasure. But then there was another movie that I worked on in Wisconsin a couple of years ago, and it was kind of an unhappy experience. But on that film, I met Eric Lukert, and Eric is the third producer of Without a Name. And Eric is one of those, he's an I know a guy. Like, "Oh, I know a guy, he's got a restaurant. I know a guy who's got a," in other words, he can get it for you. He can make things happen. He's kind of your man on the ground. And so we had a bunch of conversations, and basically Eric made it very clear that he could really spearhead this production if we did it in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So that's where we went, and we held auditions in Milwaukee, A bunch of great people came in, and then we 3 weeks after that we started filming in a small town called Keewaskum, and it was really fun. It was a bunch of local talent came out from the area around Madison and Milwaukee, and some people came from Chicago. Cast most of the, all of the cast and most of the crew were from the area, and so it was such a pleasure, and we're still in touch with everybody. We actually went back to Milwaukee a year after that and had a cast and crew screening of the movie. Great to see everybody again. We were talking about doing another film. Unfortunately, that one fell through because we were going to be shooting it at a college in Milwaukee. And the college, I don't think they've completely shut down, but they've, just they stripped away everything. Like, there's no more funding for the arts, there's no more funding for a theater program or anything like that. So that I'm very sad for that whole situation, but we're hoping to resurrect that project.
Okay, let's go into your film. Computer screens, you seem to play with them a lot. Did you design the program?
Oh, the website you
Yep,
talk
that's where
about?
I'm.
Yeah, I did it with I'm not much of a programmer, but I'm pretty comfortable with design, and and so I did the graphics for the. Basically, anytime you see a screen in the movie, I probably had something to do with it. We had a one of the things we did was before we shot the movie itself, we shot a news announcer, just reading very strange news stories, and the news announcer is played by Eric Lukert, our producer, and then, and people were like, "What are you going to do with this? What does this even have to do with the movie?" But I stuck it everywhere I could in the
You
movie
did.
because this is a weird world that the movie takes place in, and I wanted it to feel like we're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in, we're not even sure we're in the U.S. anymore. This is
So all the
strange land.
sign, so do you played with all the signage too? That's all you?
If it's a weird sign,
Yes, there's
yeah.
tons of them. Like I did, I stopped taking notes of how many signs I saw.
Well, it was there was a lot of real signage,
Yes, and I figured
and it
you were
was
just
like,
experimenting with it.
well, we just, I mean, I didn't want to step on anybody's toes as far as like local businesses and trademarks, that kind of thing. So I was like, well, we got to replace these signs anyway, and so we might as well put something weird there rather than, just some fake brand that doesn't mean anything. It was like everything has to feed into our strange story.
Who is the innkeeper based on?
You talk about the guy at the motel?
Yes, he feels like
Yeah.
I know him from somewhere.
His name is Aaron Rathbone. He is a distant relative of who played Sherlock Holmes?
Basil
Rathbone.
Rathbone?
Basil, yes, he's a distant relative of Basil Rathbone. He's lives in Wisconsin. He's actually a partner of Eric Lukert's in Madtown Films. That's their company. And he's a filmmaker himself and also an actor. And I love what he did with the creepy
He did. I just thought maybe he had a, more of a base on something and I was missing it. I'm like, it's definitely there.
Yeah.
The cartoons you show on the TV, they're free license cartoons, I presume?
Yeah, those are in the public domain. So I grabbed them off of public domain site and, you know, check it. They actually have a, I mean, I, if any of your listeners are interested, there's actually a bunch of Superman cartoons that are public domain.
Yeah, the Fleischers.
Yeah. So, you know, people need to turn in your paperwork so that your work doesn't go into the public domain, people.
Happens. Working with many of a child.
Could you say that once more? You blanked out for a second.
Sorry, working with lots of children.
I am a former teacher.
Okay, but you could be a high school teacher.
Well, I was what I was a middle school teacher for about a year, and I decided I'm not a teacher, full, you know, necessarily, but then I went into a substitute teaching, and I've also worked with kids most of my adult life. I was a former big brother, you know, in the Big Brother program. So it was fun on this movie working with all the kids, partially because I just kind of went right back into teacher mode, you know, where you have eyes in the back of your head, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, hey, I should be the only one talking here. Why, you know, what? I don't think I'm a hard ass or anything like that, but I had to make it very clear that we couldn't. First of all, it was cold. A lot of that shooting, those shooting days, people were freezing, and so I didn't want to take any chances with staying out any longer than we had to. So I kept things, you know, moving at a pretty brisk rate. But a
Okay.
lot of it was really fun too.
You had a scene with a giant fire. I think we know where we're at. And you have the kids wandering around and wandering around and wandering. They're
Yes.
there for a few minutes. What
It was,
directions do you give the kids? They are screaming, they're, I would say,
well,
obnoxious.
it was, first of all, I just want to allay people's fears about the fire. It was enhanced with visual effects
Yes,
somewhat.
I know that, but I'm
Okay.
trying to be nice here.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. But yeah, but it was, but we did have a bonfire. It was supervised by Eric Lukert, who has a background in on-set safety and, you know, stunts and that kind of thing. And the kids were actually very respectful of, you know, of the dangers involved. Nobody even got singed. For the music, for the dancing, what we did was one of the bands that's in the soundtrack of the movie. I had been talking to that. He's the leader is on an old friend of mine, and I had been talking to him and made it clear that I wanted to use some of their music. So I brought their music to the set. So what the kids are dancing to is actually the music that we used in the movie, and that was just them going crazy. I mean, I said, obviously, don't run into each other. We don't want any slam dancing, but you know, move however you're. And I think for some of the kids, I don't think they'd ever heard music like that before. So it was kind of a, you're like, what is this? You know? And I wanted to stop and tell them the history of the music, you know, blah, blah, the band, but it was like we didn't have time. But
And what they don't care.
well, it's pretty, no, it's pretty. The band, one of the bands in our soundtrack, their name is Fang. And Fang is not super well known, but bands have covered Fang's music. So Fang's songs have been covered by Nirvana, Green Day,
Oh, wow. So they're big to me. I
oh
would know
yeah.
their songs then.
Yeah, well, like one of the songs in the movie is called I Want to Be on TV. And that's in the restaurant scene where the woman comes into the restaurant. And that song has been covered by Green Day. In fact, they released that as a single. And it's really funny because my friend Sam McBride of Fang, he was telling me that when they play that song in concert, people are like, "Oh, that's the Green Day song." He's like, "No, that's our song."
Ah.
I mean, anyway, but the other thing is Fang is kind of notorious because I think in 1989 or 88, in a drug-fueled rage, Sam McBride, the leader of Fang, murdered his girlfriend, and he was caught. He was, he did time. He is clean and sober now, of course, and he's, regrets the whole thing very intensely and does a lot of work with addicts. But yeah, it's a pretty, I actually grew up next door to him. And
Oh.
yeah.
Okay.
I never went into punk rock, but I was around it a lot.
See, I love punk rock. So, any other music you would like to suggest at this point so I don't have to return to it later?
There's a band called the Winona Riders,
Yeah.
and that actually was my cousin's band, my cousin Richie, and the song, one of the songs that we have in the movie, I believe it's "No One Ever Listens to Me." That was recorded, well, that was released in 1995. Anyway, Richie told me that one of the background vocalists on that song was Billy Joe Armstrong of Green
Oh,
Day.
wow.
Because these guys were all friends. They all, they all, I wasn't in that world of music that they were, but I was sort of adjacent to it. I had a lot of mutual friends, that kind of thing. But Richie, my cousin in the Winona Riders, he is the artist who did the cover for Green Day's album Dookie, the one that they
Yeah,
released in
oh yeah, I know what you're talking
1994.
about.
Yeah, if you look in a corner, if you look in the corner of the album, there's a little drawing of a face, and it says Richie, I think. But he did anyway. And that was just a kind of a one-off. Like they called him up, like, "Hey man, can you do this cover? We're doing this new album." He's like, "Yeah, sure." No one had any idea that it was going to blow up like it did. But
Okay, what is wrong with the pinball machine? It doesn't look like one.
it's not.
Okay, I didn't think
We're
so.
exposing all the secrets of the movie. One of the fantastic things that Eric Lukert showed me, as things that we could do in the movie, like we could have this in a movie, we could have this. He one of his friends has somewhere in West Bend, Wisconsin. This guy has this storehouse of all of the electronic games and pinball machines and anything, pachinko, like flipper machines, and
Yes.
I'm talking ancient, some of them, things where you play baseball,
Yes.
the ball
I'm
rolls
old.
down and then you
Yes.
hit the ball.
I'm
Yeah.
old. I know what you're talking about. People that are like in their 20s go, "What are these old guys talking about?"
It's just incredible machines, and they had, I think they had a thing where, demonstrating how a waterfall works. Like you put in a coin and then the water starts flowing and the thing. Unbelievable. This stuff should, I mean, this should have been a museum. And this guy's just got them all in a warehouse, and he said you can use anything. And we went through the whole place, and I was looking at all this fantastic stuff, and I was like, "No, so much of this is great. None of it fits into the script." X,
Sorry,
yeah.
you're
So we found this weird little machine that I wasn't even sure how it worked, I didn't want to show it too closely because the sounds that we play with it are not, they don't come from that machine. That machine does not make those. I don't know what kind of sounds, but we said, okay, we want to use that machine and we want to use this nice antique cash register that, because we wanted the town to feel kind of caught in time. You know, you don't know what year it is or anything. So we have this ancient cash register, really beautiful piece. And that's the only thing that we chose from this fantastic warehouse. I hope to revisit at some point because I mean, you could make, you know, like that. You remember that movie Annabelle,
Of
where
course.
they've got that room full of
Yes.
horrifying toys, and each one has, well, that's I'm sure that a lot of those machines, entire movies could be built around, you know,
Oh, for sure.
around them. So someday.
Okay, you have a picture of people on the walls. Who are they?
There is a website called thispersondoesnotexist.com. Now, I don't know if that website is still around, but it's if you've never heard of it, the name is literally thispersondoesnotexist.com. And it's an image generator, and it's been around for, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 years. It generates pictures of people that have never existed.
Doesn't
They're
exist anymore. I just checked
oh, it
for you.
doesn't?
Nope.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, this what you would do is just every time you went to the website, all you did was just type that in, and it would just flash a new picture of a new person that has never been seen before and never been seen again. And I discovered this site, and I was like, I don't have the budget to hire models and extras, and you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, so I literally got as many of these images from that site as I could, hoping I could use them in some way. Because they're it's some of them look a little fishy, but you know, but they, I mean, it's so many of them just they look like real people. And
Yes.
so all of our the pictures on the wall and the pictures on the website, those are all computer generated. I hope that doesn't turn people off. We didn't, because I'm somebody who would I would like to hire models and actors if I had the money. And someday I hope to be able to do that. But at this level, I need to, you know, I need to get away with free stuff if I can. So
Where do the tapes come from?
the tape, oh, the cassettes.
Yes.
Oh, those are, they're probably Eric Lukert's, because I think he still has a car stereo.
Wow. There's a picture
Yeah.
on the wall that looks like a sketch of a man.
The pastor, you
That's
talking
what I was
about?
going with. Who did the picture?
Yeah. That is a still image from that scene of the pastor, you know, the doing his spiel in front of the crowd. So we took a still image from that, and then I doctored it up in the various paint programs to make it look like a sketch. So we wanted that guy's face to be present throughout this town, so that, you know, because the cult is really it's a cult of personality. It's a cult of, you know, like whoever is leading the cult at that time has to be very strong and charismatic. And so that man is Dan Davies, that actor who played the pastor. And Dan is going to be in a a reimagining of the giant spider invasion, which is a horror film from the 1970s.
I do know it.
Well, they're apparently they're working on it right now. They're shooting new scenes that they're going to blend in with the 1975 version. And Dan is he's got a starring role in the new scenes. So hopefully we'll be hearing a lot more about him very soon.
Sharpies on the wall with the children. Who did it?
We had a we were able to shoot in a building. It was not condemned, but it was going to be refurbished and redone. And it was a friend of Eric Lukert's who allowed us to shoot in that building. And they had some, they had, that's where we got the creepy hallway. That's where we got the room with the cats. It was just very, and the funny thing was, there's a lot of junk in the place, a lot of like old furniture and things like that. And, you know, and people said, hey, do you want to clean this up? Should we? I said, no, leave it. This is the world of our movie. This is, you know, this is a creepy place. So that's all authentic junk in the hallway there. But we attacked the walls with Sharpies, and that was done mainly by Kim Whitty, who is our prop designer, and she also has a small part in the movie. Aaron Rathbone was also, you know, one of the production designers. So we just had kind of a little party, and everybody just drew weird pictures on the wall. And it was funny because it was like we can really do this? Like, you know, like we were a bunch of little kids, you know, but we had a lot of fun with it. And we took a lot of pictures of it because we wanted to preserve it. Because we knew the place was going to be, I don't think it was going to be knocked down, but I think the whole upstairs of that building was just going to be gutted and, you know, redone, which is too bad. Because at one point, I think it looked like it was a very nice little apartment house, you know, many years before.
So when you're making a movie, and you're getting everything together, how long does this take you?
In the past, I have gone from shooting a film, you know, shooting it, taking a week or so off just to rest, and then starting the editing process. And I've gotten to a fully, you know, like a first draft, like of the entire movie, in 3 months. That's with, you know, that's with the, you know, the dialogue all in place, the music kind of roughly in place, that kind of thing. That was under a lot of self-imposed pressure, and that was kind of crazy. But it was, you know, I didn't get sick or, you know, or have any kind of a nervous breakdown. This movie took a lot longer. Without a Name we shot it in October of 2022, and we did a screening of it the cast and crew screening in the fall of 2023, so a year later. But it was very rough. I mean, there was, you know, not everything was temporary. Sound effects were temporary. There was no color correction, that kind of thing. But to get everything to the point where it felt finished, that took probably another 9 months. And
wow. So it's almost 2 years.
Yeah. And I put the final stamp on it, you know, like this is done in March. Wow. So it took about 2.5 years. Part of that was, honestly, was it the amount of time it took to bring everything to Larry, because I was, as I told you, I was meeting with him about once a week, and I was really happy to have his input, and I trusted his instincts and all of that. But at the same time, that took it took at least a day out of my week, my work week, just to go to the meeting and have everything set up, and we usually had dinner together or something like that, So that slowed me down a little bit. But again, I mean, that's like having a Svengali looking over your shoulder or Yoda, giving you this sage advice all the way through. So I was very happy about happy to have that, but I wish it hadn't taken so long, to be honest.
So let's go back to the film. What hotel were you using, or what inn? I think it's more of an inn than a hotel.
Oh, that was called the Bonnie Bell. The Bonnie Bell Motel in Keewaskum, Wisconsin. And they were really cool. They gave us a very good rate. They let us shoot in the motel room. They let us shoot in the office, the motel office.
Hold on,
And they
is
let
that the
us.
sheriff's office too then?
No, that was a real sheriff office actually. I think that was also Keewaskum, or maybe it was West Bend. But again, this is all arranged by Eric Lukert. He just knew everybody, But yeah, they were letting us shoot in the actual sheriff's station. So those are real guns that you see in the background and real equipment.
Okay.
I and the thing was, they were there while we were shooting. They were, we were being very quiet. I was so afraid that they were going to walk out and see that we had a bottle of whiskey sitting on the desk in front of the sheriff during the whole scene. Because it doesn't reflect well, but I mean, this is an imaginary place, and this is obviously a very corrupt sheriff, so hopefully no, we weren't trying to make any kind of a statement on law enforcement in general,
Okay,
but
you have a shot of a house, like it's basically the cult house. I guess I could say that's the best. And it looks like a house, but the inside doesn't look like a house. So it's got to be two different shots.
Yeah, we had to about halfway through shooting, we had a falling out with a couple of the employees of the movie. These were people who were not, they only worked on the movie a couple of days, and I didn't know them. I mean, I dealt with them, that kind of thing, but it was, I didn't know them. Anyway, they got it in their heads that we were making a very immoral film. And I'm not going to speak to
Okay.
why they thought that. But so they wanted to cause trouble. So they, first of all, they quit the film. And then they called the police on us. And the call to the police led to a call to the owner of the place where we had been staying and where we had been shooting. And so they contacted Eric, our producer. Well, first of all, nothing happened with the police. There was nothing wrong. Everything was on the level, everything, all safety protocols, COVID, we were being very careful about that. So we weren't in trouble for anything. But at the same time, the owner of the venue where we were shooting and living got spooked and contacted Eric and said, hey, we can't have the movie there. So So we had to move. So Eric and Hayato found us new places to stay, and Eric found us new places to shoot. So that's why the inside doesn't always match the outside of the. But I was trying to lean into it and just say, you know what, this is a weird world, and the architecture doesn't match up, the you know, and that's low budget. But that's also the kind of, you know, that's also the kind of surreal world that these characters were inhabiting. So
Do
I'm
the
hoping it
numbers
all.
mean anything of the children?
The numbers only in one case. I wanted to give the one character the name 10.
Yes, that's one of the main ones.
Yeah, because the girl said, I think he's a 10, because she had
Yes,
a
she
crush on
does.
him. So that was where his number came from. But for the rest of them, we were just trying to make it as random as possible.
Okay, so there's no, okay,
I
I was
think
looking.
one of the girls, her name was QT, and that was not a statement on, that was in the script. It was not a statement on the actress herself. We weren't trying to say she was a cutie. I thought all the kids were very nice looking, but that was not, you know, again, we weren't trying to get into anything like that. We
So,
just we because we didn't want there to be a hidden meaning. We had enough hidden meanings. We didn't want the names to be to be hidden meanings.
how old is the car your main character is driving? It has a CD player in it.
It's that car actually belongs to our cinematographer. That is Griffith Mahaffey, and he drove it up from Louisiana to work with us. He lives near Baton Rouge, and he loves that vehicle. He takes very good care of it. It does not have a CD player, a cassette player. That shot is actually a piece of stock footage.
Okay.
But I hope that doesn't spoil the movie for people.
No, it's just way going into it. You know what I'm like. You have old shots, brownish color. I presume you just color corrected those.
It was sad too, actually, because that the pastor's wearing this beautiful blue robe. I mean, it's just I thought those I thought the footage was gorgeous, and I was so sad that we couldn't use it, but I just said, I need a way to differentiate the past from the present. I didn't want to confuse the audience. Like, is this happening now? Who are these people? Because everybody in that scene, all the extras and everything, they don't appear anywhere else in the movie.
No, I do not. I can back you up on that one. Oh, what are the jars by the window?
You mean what's in them, or what are they
What
made
is
of?
in them?
I don't want to reveal that,
Okay,
because I
so it
don't
is what
want
I
to
think it
spoil.
is in the movie.
I don't want to
Okay.
spoil that, but
That's fine. Okay. So I just wanted to know more the substance of the creation, not what it is supposed to be in the film. What did you make them with? Or you don't want to
Oh,
tell me that
these.
either. That's what
No,
I'm
no,
looking
these.
for.
Those were. Procured by Eric and Kim Whitty. I think she had a hand in it, and Aaron also. They bought the jars. They
Stuff them.
we yeah stuffed them. And actually, the there's there are some jars in another room. Those were filled by Kim Whitty. She filled them with all kinds of creepy, you know, objects, and put liquid in some of them. I mean, it was, I kind of wish it's one of those things as a filmmaker, you say, God, I wish we could spend more time on this because these things are gorgeous. And so I'm hoping that people will, you know, if they get a chance to see the movie, they'll want to go back and take another look at some of those scenes, because the work these people did, I was very delighted with.
How much research on cults did you do?
Some. I'm not an expert by any means. I've certainly followed, like seen documentaries and heard reports about the antics of, for example, Scientology. Scientology has a huge presence in Los Angeles. I don't know if people know that they own a bunch of buildings in Hollywood, and they actually, I don't know if they still do, but they hire a lot of actors. They used to, because they made a lot of films for their programs, and they would pay union rates. I mean, actors I know who've been in their things have said, yeah, it was great, I was paid very well, that kind of thing. So they're not, doing bad things to people as far as at least publicly facing, but the tactics that they use, if you're walking down Hollywood Boulevard, for example, usually outside of one of the Scientologists' gorgeous antique buildings in right in the middle of Hollywood, a very well-dressed person will walk up to you and they will say something like, "Would you like to take a personality test?" They're very well groomed and that kind of thing. And you go in to this nicely appointed welcome center, and you get to take a fun personality test that, tries to get you to think about your own habits and that kind of thing. My understanding is that a personality test, that's one of the ways that some cults get people to go deeper. They started off as kind of a, get to know yourself kind of thing. I'm not saying that necessarily that's what Scientology does, or that directly leads to membership in Scientology, but that is a technique that I understand some cults use to attract new members. And of course, they try to separate anyone who's trying to get kids alienated and isolated. Immediately it's like, oh, do you hate your parents? Oh, do you hate, they, in other words, they want to get on your side have the kids confide in your, get the kids to confide in them so that they can take them down kind of a darker path. It's pretty scary stuff. And then, of course, you probably have heard that serial killers often start off by experimenting on animals, cruelty to animals. And so that was a little, that aspect of the story was a little, we were a little nervous to go into that, but it is based on, what's really part of that world. So nothing happened to the cat.
Well, I didn't
Nothing
think
happened
anything
to either
happened to the
cat. Yeah.
cat. Okay.
Yes.
I could ask about the cat here, but I'm gonna let that go. Your favorite film of last year?
Last year. Oh God. I don't know if it was last year. I really like Top Gun Maverick.
That
Was that the
was
year before?
2 years
Yeah.
ago, but that's fine. I'll take it. Favorite snack?
Oh God. I love dried fruit. It's very
Wow,
dangerous.
I
Yeah,
agree.
it's very dangerous because you eat too much of it and things happen, but that's
Quickly.
it. Yeah. But it tastes like candy. I mean,
It does. One actor you see all their films.
I'm sorry, could what which
One
actor?
actor, whatever
Oh.
actor you want to say, you watch all their films.
Oh God, I would have to say, Sorry about this long pause. Well, there are a couple of actors that I work with and I will see in anything
That'll
they are.
count.
No.
That counts.
That'll Well, there's he's not in Without a Name, but there's an actor. If your listeners get a chance to find him, because he works all the time. His name is Tom Shanley, and he's been in four of my films, and he's got a small part in my new one, The Maginot Line. He was in She's Out of His Mind. That's one of my films. He's in a movie, a short film I made called Snacking, which is a comedy about film festivals. And Tom is brilliant. Tom, in 1983, Tom was one of the regular cast of a show called The Yellow Rose, which was a spin-off of Dallas.
Oh, that's why I
And
didn't see it. There you go. Yeah, I was really young for that one.
Okay. Well, Tom was in he was on the ca in the cast of that. Apparently, I think he said he got to kiss Heather Locklear. So that's nice. That was part of his role. But Tom was in a movie very recently called I'm so sorry.
All
It'll
good.
come to me. He starred in a movie called Get the Gringo with Mel Gibson.
I've seen that.
He usually plays a bad guy. He played a very scary drug dealer in Dexter, the original. I think it was in the first season of the original
Then I've seen
Dexter.
him. I definitely have seen him.
Yeah, he's very he looks like Rutger Hauer. If you
Okay.
know Rutger Hauer.
Of course I do. I've seen Blade Runner.
Okay, so yes, Tears in the Rain. Yeah, of course. That Tom has, and he has the same commanding presence. I mean, he's just, and the funny thing is that he's always getting cast as villains or as henchmen. But Tom is one of the funniest actors you've ever seen. And he's in. He's he does a an episode of a show that I did with my brother called Free Advice. And Free Advice, if you go to freeadviceseries.com, you can see all our episodes for free. And Tom's episode is called The Four Locos. And he's a brilliant actor, and I hope to work with him again. I hope he keeps saying yes whenever I call him. I've had him dress up like a like an I put a I stuck him in an elf costume. He played an elf in my film Santa's Letters. In my film She's Out of His Mind, I had him in a duck costume. And at one point, he said to me, "Emmett," he said, "I wouldn't dress up like this for anybody but you, kid,"
There
which
you
made me feel
go.
very good.
Okay, well,
But
thank you for your. Oh, go ahead.
this last thing. But on the other hand, I saw Tom on stage and in the Los Angeles Shakespeare Festival a couple of years ago doing the scene of Mark Antony in, is it Richard the Third? Yeah. Anyway, he did the scene of I came here to bury Caesar, not to praise him. Just my head exploded. I mean, it was such a phenomenal piece of acting. And anyway, that I mean, and that's his training. But he can do almost anything, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, yes, you were ending the show, and I respect that.
Okay, have a
So,
great night. Goodbye.
thank you.